Welcome to How to Write Kai Papers, the podcast. I am Dr. Leonard Nacke, an associate professor at the Stratford School of Interaction Design and Business and the director of the HCI Games Group at the University of Waterloo in Canada. It is difficult to turn an exciting HCI research project into a successful Kai publication. This podcast is here to help you. Episode 5, interview with Vero van den Abele.
So my name is Vero van den Abele, but Vero is just fine. I'm a professor in human-computer interaction at the KU Leuven in Belgium. And I've been active in the HCI field for 15 years now, or maybe longer. I studied interaction design at Carnegie Mellon University when I was 25. Yeah. So yeah, about 20 years almost. Yes.
Perfect. So you're the ideal partner for our interview today. This course that I'm teaching for Kai students here is trying to find some of the stylistic, structural, and content advice that we can get from people that have a lot of experience in the Kai community. So you're a perfect partner for this. So I'm going to dive right in and ask you the first question from my never-ending list of interview questions here. What do you think is the biggest mistake that new graduate students going into Kai and aspiring writers, people wishing to publish at Kai, make? What is the biggest mistake that you've seen in your experience with that?
I cannot pinpoint one mistake. I just think Kai, the level is just high. It's in our field, Kai is basically the top journal. So the bar is high. And so maybe one of the biggest mistakes is trying to get into Kai too quickly or with papers that just not making the mark. If you are going to submit to Kai, your work should be finished. You should not think that you will be getting a review round and reviewers being nice and asking you to improve certain parts of your paper still. No, it should be spot on.
Okay, so this is nice. What would you consider to be finished work for Kai? What is the scope that you would say a Kai paper should have?
Yeah, of course, it's a very diverse community, so it's impossible to say that there's one scope or one way to define a finished paper. But it's written in the guidelines of the Kai template even.
But in terms of the content of the research, what would you consider a complete research project that somebody would submit to Kai? Like, what's a good scope and size? Is it one study? Is it maybe two studies? Would you say there's a certain size of people that we should be interviewing or that we should be analyzing? What would you, from your own papers maybe, what would you consider a good scope for these projects?
Yeah, I think a good scope is a clear delineated study. So I don't think Kai papers it's not the kind of venue where you would collect a couple of studies and then make a summary of a couple of studies. Of course, you have systematic reviews, but then it's clearly a systematic review on tons of papers and then you present that work. But you only have 10 pages and you don't have that many words, so it shouldn't be a drawn out, elaborated paper. It should be a clear study. You present related work presented at earlier Kai conferences or other related brother or sister conferences, and then you clearly present what you've done and you present some clear results.
So let's talk a bit more about content then in terms of what people would write inside of a Kai paper. As an author, and obviously we're both not native English speakers, but we're writing in English, obviously, for this conference. So do you have any favorite style quirks or pet peeves about grammar or about commas or other things that you try to teach your students to do it this way or to write in a certain way?
It's funny. It shouldn't be proper English, but actually I have a small anecdote because 2 years ago I submitted a paper to Kai Play and it was rejected, which happens to all of us. But one of the comments was that it should have been proofread by a native English speaker. Now, at that time, I had one co-author from England who studied at Oxford University, and I had one co-author who had been working in the USA for 5 years, so it was very ironic that That paper actually got the comment that clearly it was written by non-native speakers because it wasn't. But they're the obvious pet peeves, and you should just have your academic English there and remember what your teacher told you about how to write proper academic English. But I think that's the easy part, you know, the proper academic English. That's not the hardest part about getting into CHI. I think the novelty of your work should be really good, and your contribution should be solid, and it should be clear, and that's much harder to fix if it's not good enough.
So how would you say then, how do we find novel work if we're young writers wanting to find that golden nugget somewhere? And what can we do to find something that's novel? What's a good strategy to do that?
Yeah, and while I was saying that, I realized that I was a bit a hypocrite, actually, because there's this tension between novel work and solid work sometimes. It's being innovative and having a very solid experimental evaluation. It doesn't always align. And I think it's a tension at CHI and at other conferences. It's also a tension, for example, for CHI Play. Sometimes you have interesting ideas, but the evaluation is maybe not carried out with as much scientific rigor as you would like to. I think it's maybe less of a tip for the future CHI writers, but as a community, we should always be wary of that trade-off and maybe be careful that we don't reject innovative work in favor of boring, solid work.
Okay, so there should always be a balance between innovation and plus one iterative studies.
But the guideline that I can give to future CHI writers is that if you are going to go for a bit lesser scientific rigor, you should really have innovative work, because you need to tip the trade-off then in the right direction.
So you would say innovation can actually trump rigor at CHI? That's possible?
I think Trump, I'm not sure I would use that word, but I think it should. And well, you have, of course, the alt CHI, and so there is, we try to make room for that at CHI. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. And if it's truly innovative work, yes, I think so. But then, of course, you have to be very clear about why this is truly innovative.
So let's talk a little bit more about, now we talked a little bit about the big picture and the structure, but I do want to talk a little bit more about writing style. And you said it's not that important, but I do actually think there are some things that we can tell people that are first-time writers that they should absolutely avoid in research writing. There's things that you just don't do, right?
Yeah, I didn't say writing style isn't important. Absolutely not. But what I said is that if the content is not right, there's no way you're going to fix that with proper academic English. So, of course, I think at CHI, the writing should be good, and especially your macro structure of your paper should be very clear. And I hate it when I have to review papers where I clearly see that the students haven't had a good grasp of how to write academic papers, and they mix results in method section, or they present new items in a discussion that really should have been mentioned in the introduction. So there's this clear guidelines that you need to follow with respect to the traditional structure of academic paper, where you have introduction, and then you present your methods or your approach, and then you present your results, and then you present your discussion. So that's the data of an academic paper, of course.
So my question then is, do you have, or do you remember, because obviously we write a lot over time, and so sometimes we forget the stuff that we've written, but do you remember any one of your papers that you've gotten accepted at CHI or any SICHI conference where you would say, okay, I've really done an excellent job of structuring this paper? Like, obviously not everything we write is always perfect, but do you have one paper where you would say, if you look up this paper, this would actually be a really good example of...
I think that all my papers are like that. I actually remember another anecdote where, again, a paper was rejected and the comments of the reviewers was, well, it's really well written. It's still not a good paper. But it's really well written, well structured. I should look that up, that paper, again. It was a nice way of being, I was still on my PhD track, it was a nice way of being let down. I think generally those main rules, I think most of my papers, or all of them, adhere to them. I do notice at CHI, in contrast to other conferences, of course, we still speak more formal English, but for example, we do allow we or these more active sentence constructions, whereas some journals, especially in the more medication, the medicine-oriented conferences, they really don't even want to read active sentences, and everything has to be, it's all passive, and actually it's really not nice to read these kind of sentences that are really passive. So I think to that end, at CHI it's still pretty flexible, and still, which is in comparison to other conferences and journals, it's still pretty, well, informal is not the right word, but it's still, it's more informal or more laid back than other conferences.
Perfect. So since we're talking about trying to get the right style with these things, I want to move more towards structure. And you said, okay, you have to follow the guidelines of a scientific paper. Now, we all know we usually have abstract, introduction, related work, main methods, results, discussion, and then limitations, future work as part of that. Or what would you say if we look at the abstract specifically? What's a good structure for an abstract? Like, what would you put? Because you only have so many sentences in an abstract. And I know that I personally have a very strong opinion that I'm teaching in this course about how an abstract should be structured. And I just wanted to see if there are any people that share that.
I also have a very strong opinion. So now I wonder whether we have the same opinion, because otherwise we disagree strongly. I think actually writing an abstract is easy. You should never write it at the start of your paper. You should always write it at the end of your paper. And basically it's one sentence where you start with the warrant. Why is it important? Why is your work important? And it's like a funnel. It's a very open sentence. Then you have one sentence, the second sentence, where you present the main research question. This is what this paper is about. Then you have a sentence where you say, this is the method. Then you have a sentence where you present the main results. This is what we found. And then you have a sentence or two where you say, okay, this is what we can take away from it. This is why these results really matter. And the thing that you also mentioned in discussion, probably. And that's, it's easy writing an abstract.
I'm very glad we agree on the structure, because that would have been very strange if we had different opinions. But yes, that's, I think, a very good description of what should go into an abstract. But then if you look at the whole paper, do you think that structure is mirrored in the paper somewhere? If we look at introduction, for example, what would you generally write there in an introduction?
I think your introduction, again, because it's really, the abstract really is a summary of your entire structure. You start again with your funnel, you start with the warrant. Why is this research even necessary? Why is it interesting? Why should it happen? Then you zoom in on the research question, you present related theories, constructs that readers should understand, you present related work, stuff people have been doing before you. And then I think it's really good to end your introduction, or to, again, very clearly repeat, look, this is the research question. This is what we're going to investigate in this paper, or that's what it's about. I hate it when I read an introduction, and after reading the introduction, I'm still not really sure what the paper is about. I think that's a typical mistake. If you were actually asking me earlier, what's one tip that I could give to students? It's that one. The research question should be obvious. When I read the introduction, there should be no doubt in my mind as a reader what the research question actually is. And I like it to be literally in there. I like it when students or writers look, the research question that this paper is tackling is this.
That sounds very good. I do agree with you completely that the research question, or as I usually phrase it, the problem that we're addressing in the paper needs to be crystal clear. And oftentimes in the papers that get rejected, the main reason it's not clear what problem is being addressed. And then we're lost because we're going into the main paper not knowing why we're here. And so it's like somebody didn't put the signpost there, and you just, Okay, so I guess we've with that already established that abstract and introduction are really important for a paper, because they show what the paper is about and what we should do. Now, if you look at the following sections, related work, main methods, results, discussion, which of these other sections do you think is next in line in terms of importance here that we should really focus on when we're writing?
I think here you really have to make a distinction between, is this like a design paper where you describe a design, or is it more like an evaluative paper where you have the typical experiment and the structures diverge a bit. Mm-hmm. Because if it's a classical experimental paper, then of course you can go with the method and you can say, okay, you know, we did a within subject experiment and we have so many participants and they were in that location. And these were the measurement instruments, and that's easy. I think papers where you write about designs, it's harder. The structure is less clear-cut that you have to present, but I think it's still good that you try to describe designs and rationales. If you just write a design and you want to explain why you made certain design choices and how you moved forward from them, again, you have to try to write it down very clearly that readers understand what your choices were for making, well, what the reasons were for you making certain choices. But it's definitely, I think, a harder type of paper. And the kind of papers that I find currently have a lesser place at CHI. I'm not saying I am arguing that I think they should not be at CHI. I'm not sure CHI is the venue for that type of cultural studies papers, honestly. I think there are other conferences for these types of papers. Should we say this to CHI, to students?
Opinions, right? It's just an opinion, and anyone's entitled to have a view on CHI. I believe some of the other people that I'm interviewing have very strong opinions. So
yeah, it reminds me of a paper, of a presentation at CHI that I saw by Paul Dorish about implications for design. And so he's an anthropologist, and he was very upset about CHI reviewers always arguing that these kinds of anthropological studies or ethnographic studies or ethnographically inspired studies, because in CHI it's never proper ethnography anyhow, because we're never going to live 2 years with a certain ethnic tribe. But he hated the fact that there should always be implications for design, because if you start with that idea, then you're ethnographic studies flawed from the very first start. Find that an interesting argument, and at the same time, I do think there needs to be a relevance for a design community. So maybe there should not be a paragraph saying implications for design, but there should be clear relevance for a CHI community in these kinds of cultural studies papers, because otherwise might be hard to get accepted.
I think this brings us to a very important point. When you're writing a CHI paper, basically when you're writing anything, I would say you always have to write for the audience. So knowing your audience, what would you say in terms of committees? Are the committees that lean more towards a very standard evaluative approach where you do your standard evaluation? And what committees would you say are more on the design side? Obviously, we have a design committee. And again, this is just pure opinion. I'm not saying that this is something that any one of us actually understands. But what do you think from your own experiences? What subcommittees are more classical studies and what subcommittees are more design and systems?
I should draw the list of all the subcommittees, because I don't know all of them by heart. But what is the subcommittee where you submit your FITS law studies to? Is that the user input, the input technology studies?
I think it's interactive technologies, but let me just look up the committees here. This year, anyways, we have the subcommittees user experience and usability, specific application areas, interaction beyond the individual, games and play, privacy, security and visualization, health, accessibility and aging, design, interaction techniques, devices and modalities. That would be the one for FITS law studies, understanding people theory, concepts and methods, and engineering interactive systems and technology. That might also be FITS law studies.
I'm not sure it resides with committees. I don't know, because the interactive technologies, you can also be very innovative and just present your design. I'm not sure certain subcommittees are more conducive than others. Of course, the alt-CHI, that's going to be more open.
So let's, okay, so you've mentioned Altkai a couple of times. So let's actually ask you about this, because I've heard lots of different opinions about Altkai. What is your opinion on Altkai? Is it really a Kai paper? Should we consider it a Kai paper? Or is it, as some people say, not a real Kai paper because of a slightly different review process? What's your opinion about this?
What is art? Well, art is what you can see in the museum. So I'm thinking, what is a Kai paper? It's a paper that's presented at Kai. So in that respect, I would say Altkai is a Kai paper as well. Yeah. So I think it is a Kai paper. Yes. And I think, and I will repeat it because I've already hinted at this, I think as Kai community, we have to be sure that we remain open to these kinds of papers. And maybe it's a bit of a pity that we had to create a separate venue for these types of papers where we are recognized as reviewers that it's there's valuable material in there, but at the same time we're saying we cannot go into the traditional venue. What does it tell about us that we need separate subcommittee or venue for that? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's now take, at the end of this interview, take a bit of more personal angle. I would like to ask you some questions about your writing process in general for Kai papers, because all of us have our different quirks about this. So what technology do you use for writing your papers? Are there any programs or operating systems that you prefer? Are there any little helper programs, thesaurus, dictionary, something like that? What do you use?
I hate co-writing with people that don't use a reference manager. I'm at a point where I think I'm going to refuse if people don't want to use a reference manager. I myself, I use Zotero, which I find very nice. I know there are other tools too that are also free. So the argument that it's too expensive is really not an argument because it's free. So that's very important. I have written a couple of papers in lab with engineering people that are very strong about not using words. I hate LaTeX, yes. I think when you co-write papers, it's not a good tool because I really use the reviewing and commenting a lot, and I think you need it. You need a lot of iterations. You need to be able to, in a very flexible way, to review and comment, and LaTeX is not good for that. I think we just have to be blunt and open and clear. Lately, I've co-written a couple of papers in Google Docs. And actually, with a new annotation system and the suggesting option, that actually works quite well, to my surprise.
What about the format, though? Do you then, at the end, just copy it over into Word? And
yes, exactly. Mm. Exactly. Yeah. And the reference stuff is still a bit of an issue. So at this moment, honestly, and I'm from training, by training I'm a designer, so I'm really not too keen on Word when I have to lay out material. But I think for reviewing and working collaboratively and having these add-ons for reference managers, I think it works quite well.
Is there anything else you use for collaboration? You said Google Docs, there the collaboration is built in that you can share with other people. Are you using any online storage or other collaborative features?
Yeah, of course you have the Dropbox or whatever, Google Drive, but that's not really a tool. No, that's about it, I think. And then, of course, what you mentioned, thesaurus.com, I use quite often, and some Google Translate from time to time when I cannot come up with a word that I need. No, nothing in particular.
And what operating system? Are you a Windows or a Mac user?
So I live in an environment that's heavily Windows oriented, but 2 years ago I decided to use my Mac anyhow. So now I am the only one with a Mac in my landscape office with 25 people. But honestly, I think it's irrelevant, the operating system with respect to writing papers.
Let's again, now that we talked about tools, let's talk about some of your favorites. Are there any people, Kai researchers, Kai writers, that you admire for their writing? Is there anyone that you have a little bit of an academic crush on that you say, man, if I could only write like that, it would be so great?
Yeah. I already mentioned him, Paul Dorish. I think he's an amazing writer. And actually from the Kai Play community or Kai community, I also think Rila Kalet is an amazing writer. So yeah, these would be my academic crushes.
Great. Thank you so much.
An environment without kids. Yeah. A coffee shop. That would be nice. Yeah. basically a desk where you can work and for a longer period without disturbance from the outside world.
Do you seek out those places during the Kai writing phase? Do you actively go to coffee shops?
Yeah, it's necessary. As students, for example, I have a library across the street. And as I already mentioned, I actually work in a landscape office, which is horrible. So yeah, I might go to the library or a quiet spot. Yeah. But it's the same kind of places you seek out when you need to study or when you need to focus and you really want to be able to get into that flow and not be disturbed.
If you think about the visual presentation of papers, some papers do a really good job in trying to present their results in figures and tables and just visually feel very compelling. Do you have a preferred way of how you like your tables and your figures laid out? You're a designer from a background, so you must have some opinion about this.
It's nice that you ask it because it's also a pet peeve of mine, actually. I have to co-write often with people that don't have any feeling for that. And then we're nearing the end of the process and I've laid out everything and I've ensured that there's no widows and orphans. So I don't know if you know what widows and orphans are, but I hate it when a page starts with the end of a sentence. Don't do that. But then you see someone else completely ignoring that and messing up your layout. No, I think it's important that there's an attractive visual presentation. But of course, there's also the reality that we all try to fit in as much text on these 10 pages. So sometimes you have to give in a bit. But yeah, I would argue that it's important. And it's actually a way of manipulating your reviewer, I think, because if your paper looks sloppy, then implicitly or subconsciously, your reviewer will attribute certain aspects to your paper that have to do with sloppiness. And it works the other way around as well, I think. If your paper looks nice and if you have paid attention to the visual details, then your reviewers might also assume that your work is also more up to standards.
That's a very nice takeaway from this interview. So thank you very much for answering all my questions. I know there were many. And do you have any final advice that you want to give to people starting out in Kai that you think this is the most important thing? If you can do one thing, people do this thing, maybe.
I would say don't give up, but don't submit too early either. Your work has to be good, because otherwise it's just going to be crushed by reviewers and you're going to feel really bad. So don't submit half work to Kai. And then submit your best and don't be disappointed if it's still burned down to the ground by reviewers.
It's just part of the process. So
yes, absolutely.
Okay, so thank you very much for this interview. And yeah, I'm looking forward to catching up at one of the next Kai conferences with you.